Welcome back, everybody. My name's Evan, one of your co-hosts on the BCC Pod, and we're so glad that you've joined us back today. This is where we take what's happening in our church and what we're learning together and bring it into some unscripted conversations that dive a little bit deeper. Whether you're tuning in on your drive, whether you're at the gym, or you're just relaxing at home, we're so glad that you're here. This week, we are continuing in our discussions about resiliency, and today, we get the opportunity to sit down with Jamie Reimer, our pastor of adult discipleship. You're now the fourth guest, I think, we've had on the podcast.
Man.
Patty, Laura, Sherry, you. So.
That's a really strong list.
So that also means you're in the top five. So.
We call that the trial and error section. But I mean, the list of guests before me are really strong. So,
you were speaking this past weekend on financial resiliency and how to build resiliency within our finances. The first kind of segment, if you will, that we normally do is to do a summary of the sermon and kind of a bit of a recap. I won't, because you're a guest, I won't make you kind of combine it to four words.
Man, like I was ready for four words.
If you're ready, you're welcome to do it. I mean, love that.
It's a gimme, right? Like, trust God, not money.
Unreal. Right? Like, it sounds like Andrew's like greed, bad, generosity, good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I felt like that's just a gimme, right? Like, I think I might've even said that in the sermon, but the simplicity of it can sometimes very easily overshadow the significance and the depth of what that means for us.
Yeah, for real.
I think I even said on Sunday, like, it's really easy to talk about this stuff. It's a whole nother aspect to try and actually shape your life around that.
Why do you think, because even on the conversation part of things, why do you think finances and money is such a hard thing to discuss? Like, we'll talk about this a little bit later. But just like I know when we talk about the financial health course around here, we talk about that it teaches, it aims to also teach us just how to talk about money and how to do that in a productive way. Why do you think that's such a tough conversation?
And that's a good question. And like many good questions, I feel woefully unqualified to answer it well. But, you know, like I know in the years that I've done like pre-marriage counseling or engage with couples, like there are topics that there we say, hey, these are typically tough to talk about because and the reasons why, I don't know if I know exactly, but I think what came to mind for me in prepping for the sermon too was just like how much stability and security and probably a sense of where my life is supposed to go or what leads to a good life. Those aspects, they kind of interplay with money, with wealth. And so if you tell me how to live with that, are you telling me how to live my life? Are you telling me, like, who are you to tell me what to say about this?
And
again, my filters are on right there because that's partly why this Sunday I was like, we're going to listen to Jesus on this. Cause you know, I actually had someone from our church after one of the services, he's a financial planner, and he came up jokingly, but he's like, well, I feel thoroughly offended. And, you know, I was like, well, hey, like, take it up with Jesus. That's fine. You know, like, so, yeah, but it is a hard, challenging, it can be a difficult topic to talk about because it's really easy to, I can look at you and decide whether you're using your money properly or not. For whatever reason, I think I can have that. You can do that to somebody. So, but we're like, no. Why is it so easy to do that when we're like, no, I don't want you to do that. So it gets really complex.
And it's true. I think like the more I've been thinking about it since listening to you speak is just this idea of how much excess we have, but how much we're told that we lack culturally and how much that feeds into it's funny, like how much it feeds for a culture that lives in so much excess, just a scarcity mindset a lot of the times. And there's like, I think when we talk about approaching that conversation, there's a vulnerability that I think for a lot of people is rooted in a lot of fear of like not having enough, or if I don't have enough, what does that say about me? And like all of those sort of things. So I think it's true. Yeah. You kind of, even in just saying like, it could be a bunch of things. There are so many things within what you said there that I think make it really difficult and a really, just a really vulnerable conversation to have. Like it was always one of the top kind of things of like, you don't talk about money with people, you don't talk about politics, you know, yeah. right? Like it's on that like no fly list.
Yeah, that's a really good way to frame that, I think, right? Like imagine sitting down with even some of your closest friends and saying, hey, do you want to talk about our relationship with money? And yeah. would you be open to like actually sharing about where maybe we can have more maturity in our yeah. money? Like I think most of our friends would kind of look at us and be like, what?
Yeah. Oh, 100.
Yeah, I'm, like, what are you talking
I'd be
about?
Like, why?
Why? Yeah. Why are we doing this? This seems odd, right? And it doesn't have to, even have to be threatening. It can just feel odd.
Yeah.
Like, why are we even talking about this? Isn't something we talk about? Which, yeah. as many things, when you avoid it, it right. tends to create problems for us.
Yeah. Right?
Just like anything else, if I avoid my own flawed thinking, or I avoid the feelings that I have about something, and I just press them down. They're gonna come out somewhere.
Well, it's interesting too, because it's on that like no fly list, but it is also on the list of like the top stressors for people, right? And it's like that's a brutal combination for us as a culture, right? Of something that's the highest up there for the highest stressor for people, but the lowest thing we talk about with yeah. one another.
And the number of people who I've had the chance to talk to over the years too, even about simple things like money management, like budgeting, who you know, will say, I don't actually know how to do this. Mm. And there's embarrassment that comes with that, because I think we just sort of expect I'm supposed to be good at this.
Right.
But if no one taught you,
yeah.
you know, there's very few of us that are just intuitively good at most things. And money is a tricky one, especially since, as Jesus said, it can really wrap itself around you and start to convince you that it brings security, when at the same time it just flies away
yeah.
as you know, and you just kind of like sand through your fingers. Sometimes it feels like I just can't make this work.
Yeah. On the kind of broader topic of finances and money management, what was kind of the main thing you were hoping that people would take away from your sermon this past weekend?
So with finances and money management, like what I think about is how we understand what we have and then how we use it, right? So the way I tried to frame it is that in terms of using wisdom with our money. So when we are provided for, you know, maybe things are good financially, or maybe, you know, like many people do, you feel like they could be better. Like right now is a really tough time in a lot of ways financially. You talk to a lot of people who like, you know, will I ever afford a house, like on the big scale of things versus, you know, maybe I can't afford milk anymore, like just these sorts of things. So I think the idea of trying to understand that with financial strain, with money management, there are decisions other people make that negatively or positively affect you. And then there's decisions that we make that do the same. And as we teach, and as I learn myself in my own recovery, is that, hey, there are things that are out of my control and there's things that are in my control, and the wisdom to know the difference between those and the courage to lean into the one that I can control is really important. So what can you control in your money management? You know, you can't just flip a switch and increase your income.
Yeah.
I wish we could. Wouldn't that be great? But what can you manage a little bit more? I didn't have time to talk about it, but like in terms of balancing your budget, like there's very simple and straightforward things that you can do to try and help manage that in terms of, you know, maybe I'll do it for less, or maybe I'll do less of it, or maybe I'll cut it out, and just some of those tactics. So just trying to help give some hope and some encouragement that when there is financial strain or we're feeling that stress, it's not hopeless, right? There are things that you can do with wisdom, with trust, that can bring good outcomes in a lot of ways. It can take hard work. It can be a challenge because it's usually requires changing our behaviors, which as you and I know is really hard.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of a, I don't know, meandering summary of that.
Yeah. No, I think that's so good. And I think too, one of the things I love about it is that it's not a denomination or like money amount dependent, that like financial resiliency doesn't come down to like once you're at this amount in a checking account or anything like that, that we can have financial resiliency no matter what situation or stage we're in.
Yeah. I mean, there's studies and stats that are out there that show that a certain wage, you know, does help bring down stress mm-hmm. because you feel like, okay, I can make it.
Yeah.
I can do this. But you and I both have heard stories, and maybe it's been our story, where we should have enough money, but our habits mean that they're not, or our legs get taken out from under us and suddenly that's not there. So in all of the world of uncertainty and all of the reality that we control far less of our lives than we'd like to admit, how do we be resilient when we have very little control over our finances in that regard? And so that then comes back to Christ and comes back to understanding his care and his and his way in that and being like, this is really challenging to hold on to and live out, but it does lead to a fulfilled life, as we read in scriptures, whether we have a lot or a little. I found the secret to a fulfilling life.
Yeah. Right. I remember this going way back, and shout out to Martin, but I remember him speaking at youth one time about money. This is, I think, going back to when I was in youth.
Okay.
And he mentioned a study that was done where they asked a group of participants what they felt like they would need money-wise, like salary-wise, to feel stable.
Sure. Right?
And the averaged out answer was basically double whatever they were making at the time. Yep. They were like, that, I know I'm going to be, that's totally good, right? Ever. And then they gave them that and they followed them. And what they found in most participants was that their habits changed, right? And it's just that you grow with the money as it grows as well, and your habits change and things change, right? Yep. And that this idea of like, oh, if I just had blank, that would make, right, is consistently, I think, proven to not be true.
Yeah, that's I love that you bring that up, because it's so obvious and it's so played out in reality, and yet we find it so hard to believe it true for ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, I have lived that. Yeah. I have been in a job where I'm like, if I could just get to this level, then I'll be okay. And it was really challenging, and I had to wrestle for a long time with the fact of, as my opportunity and dynamic changed and suddenly that paycheck was larger, you know, then suddenly on the one hand, you're like, wow, some of these bigger needs we can actually meet now, which was great. But yeah, your habits change a little bit too. Yeah. And then there's also the strain of just the cost of everything going up. But, you know, so it's, for me, this is a really poignant topic, because money has been perpetually a challenging area in my heart that wants to take over from the Lord, that wants to hold on. And so it's been an on again, off again battle for me of, oh man, I'm trusting money again. Why is that?
Yeah.
Why am I not satisfied? Why am I not content? And those moments when I do experience that is just so much more freeing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it is challenging.
Yeah. Obviously, I mean, even as we sit here, I'm struck by the fact that we could probably go back and forth on this kind of topic for a while, because it is such a big topic, right? And there's so many different kind of rabbit holes to go down. Is there anything from this past weekend as you were prepping that you didn't dive into that you really wanted to, but kind of didn't have time?
Yeah, the reality is I probably had 3 sermons worth. I actually had Sherry look at one of my drafts.
Oh, nice.
And just be like, you know, hey, dude, like, I'm missing something here. Can you work through it? And she said, you basically have 5 sermons in here. And so, you know, there was a few things there. And so, like, one of the things I think that could have made sense, but there just wasn't time to spend with it, would be some of Jesus's more extensive teaching on trusting the Lord, right? Like, again, Sermon on the Mount that we referenced, but if you're familiar with what he teaches there about, don't worry about tomorrow, look at the birds, look at the flowers, you know, they're here today, gone tomorrow. Doesn't God care more for you? Like, if you're familiar with that and you're listening to me on Sunday, it's likely you might have said, why didn't he include that?
Right.
Right. And there's a sense of, man, this makes sense. But it is so challenging of a teaching and so profound that, you know, especially that it just felt like, okay, how do I talk about this without adding another 45 minutes just to help us grasp it and understand it? Because at least from my perspective, it's a little destabilizing. Jesus is inviting, but I think also asking a lot of us in that. And our series is much more practical, right? It was like, how do we build resilience? How do we prep for that? But that would have been something.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is, so I tried to work us through this three-part theme of like trust and wisdom and generosity. And one of the things I did was work through and be like, okay, where does this theme come up in scripture other places? And I was surprised by some of what came out, right? Like there's like in James and Proverbs and I think in Corinthians is these aspects where it's again, these themes, sometimes they're mixed around a little bit. And initially I'm like, I'm going to work through all of these. There's just not time for that, right? There's just not going to work, and it's going to add complexity, and I'm going to just muddy the waters for everyone. I would have loved to get into the way that this is not just an idea here. This is actually a theme throughout the scriptures.
That's so cool.
And not just with money, but it includes money, but like trust God. And then, you know, use wisdom in your life and then be generous. And some of it was even like recognize that God is generous, that this is who he is, how he acts with us. And so, yeah, that would have been great to get into, but it's probably a whole sermon series on its own.
That's so cool. It's funny. We've done, through the course of this podcast, we've been through four sermon series now, or we're in our fourth, I think, something like that.
Right.
And, no matter what topic we throw out there, it'll always come down to a foundational truth of trusting in God more. I think whether we talk about politics, whether we talk about resiliency, whether we talk about the seven deadly sins, right? It all kind of rests when it comes to our response and our relationship with God. It kind of all rests on that bedrock, right? Of trust in him and how, it's part of me is like, we probably should do a sermon series on it.
There's no end to those topics, right? Because following Jesus is such an all-encompassing reality.
Yeah.
It strikes me that Jesus never once backs down from him being the center of all meaning and purpose and truth, right? Yeah. He's never like, it's okay. Like, I'm okay stepping aside a little bit. Like, he's gentle.
Kind of the way.
Right, exactly, right? Like, in every situation, he's gentle, he's kind, and he's clear on it, but he's very much like, yeah, exactly. Like, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So, you know, what part of our life doesn't need to die to itself and be submitted to him? And so, you know, that just interweaves with everything in your life. So this is what makes preaching so challenging because you're like, oh, it links with this and this. And also why it always comes back to, oh, of course, Jesus is the center. God is the epicenter of all things and around all things. And so it's always, how do we come back to him and then surrender to him and submit to him and praise him? Like it's never ending, which is both, if I'm honest, sometimes infuriating because I'm like, I thought I understood this. Okay.
Yeah.
And also freeing because you're like, okay, you're a loving God. You're a compassionate God who keeps working on me and keeps drawing me closer, even in my spaces where I thought I understood something and maybe I didn't as well as I hoped. And so, but we're going to keep trusting you in this too. Even in my confusion and my perplexity, it's back to trusting God.
Given that we're talking about financial resiliency this week, we wanted to take a minute to let you know about the financial health workshop that's starting this month. So, Jamie, you're actually the leader of this workshop, correct?
Yeah. I'm doing the first two, then Laura Humphreys is tag teaming in for the third one. Which, thank you, Laura.
Yeah, shout out to Laura.
Love that. And it's not just
past guest, also in the top five.
That's right. And it's starting this Wednesday, May 8th. So it's sweet. Like, we're really close.
Yeah. Signups are still open. They'll be open until it starts, I believe. So make sure if it's something you want to get into to go do that. But maybe, do you want to talk a little bit? This is, you've run this course a couple different times.
Yep.
What's kind of like if you were doing a pitch to somebody about why you think they should sign up?
Yeah. This course is, we run all the content from CAP Canada, which is Christians Against Poverty, which is, I'm finding every time, like just a really astounding organization. They do a lot to help people in financial challenging situations. And part of it is just training and tools and strategies to help change our dynamics. So if it's managing debt, and getting out of debt, this is for you. If it's like we talked about, understanding your relationship with money and why it seems to dominate your life, or you want to be able to talk about it better with your family or with your friends or with your spouse, this is a great way to do that. If you want to understand budgeting and managing your money so that, as I said on Sunday, it doesn't manage you, these are some tools to go with that. And then what I always like to tell people is this is confidential in the sense that you're never required to share with us or anybody else the details of your financial situation. You got to be honest with yourself about that. You got to be, you know, be truthful with yourself, but we're not looking to dig into your private life. We just want to be encouraging and supportive and help make some healthier decisions moving forward.
Yeah. So if this sounds like something that you want to be a part of, if you want more information and to register, you can check out the link in the description, or you can go to bethanycc.ca/upcoming, and we hope you get involved. All right. So we got some questions today. we take questions from the congregation and ones that I've made. This week, we didn't get any questions from the congregation, I'm assuming because money's so hard to talk about. so I've prepared some questions for you today. We'll kind of work through them. The first one says, what does it mean to live with an abundance mindset in a world shaped by capitalism and consumerism?
Yeah. So we've already talked about like trusting God, right? Mm-hmm. And then like, what does that mean? It means that I trust God cares for me and that he will provide. Mm. So, you know, that sounds great. And as we talk, like it's a lot easier to do when things are going well, what happens when they're not. But this is a theological understanding that comes from the very opening chapters of the scriptures where God creates a garden full of life, full of everything that's needed, that this is actually what we're anticipating going back to, right? The sense of God provides for everyone what is needed. There's no lack. There's so much freedom and comfort, and that this is the kind of God that cares for us, is the kind of God that knows you, Evan, that knows me.
Yeah.
And to recognize, you know, there's enough for my need, but maybe not for my greed, right? Just to use that terminology.
Great line.
But it then challenges us as well to say, okay, an abundance mindset gets really profound and really challenging when, even when I don't have enough for my need, God still provides. Like, to think about that and understand, like Jesus teaches us when he's in the wilderness, when he's fasting for 40 days and the enemy comes and says, you know, make bread out of these stones. And Jesus has a need for food. And yet, you know, he says, no, that's not how we're going to do this. And actually one of my favorite stories is Jesus meeting this woman at the well and having this really profound conversation. His followers have gone into town literally to get food.
Right.
He sent them to get food, right? They come back. And this lady is like, oh my goodness, I've met this amazing person. Have you met him? Do you know him? And then they're like, here, Jesus, we've got you some food. And he's like, I have food you know nothing about. So even in a moment of need, Jesus has a sense that God is providing beyond even what's needed. Like, I don't claim to understand that fully, but to have an abundance mindset is digging and letting yourself sink into that sense that God does and is able to provide in every circumstance. And that's a challenging one. And I recognize, you know, we live in a culture that is quite well off, that we have a lot of our needs. And so to hear me talk about it is maybe not so profound, but we have plenty of examples of people who, from a place of desperation or from a place of lack or seeming lack, talk about God providing and God being generous. And so it's a shift in our mindset for sure.
Yeah. And I think it's really funny in that story, the bait and switch of Jesus being like, go get food. And be like, I got better food. Be like, wait, so does he want it or does he not want it?
And even the fact that the dialogue is recorded, the disciples are like, did someone bring him food? Like, who brought him bread?
But I think it is super profound. And I think even just the... I think the practice of recognizing what's fueling our decisions and what's fueling how we approach finances is a really good one. Like, I think about if we use like this abundance mindset and this abundance that we have in Christ as a lens to approach finances and let that set the tone, like trying to realize and kind of stop the loop of consumerism controlling how we approach our finances and how we engage with them. Because it can be so easy, right, to not question, like, wait, why do I feel like I need that, right? Or why do I feel like I need more, or like those sort of things. And because it's so normalized, and because the idea of just like getting ahead and moving up and getting more and amassing more is so praised, I think, that like the practice of saying like, why do I feel that? Why do I want that? It can be a really good one.
And why will it work for me when it clearly doesn't work so well for everybody else? You know, like we miss that so often.
No, man, I'm the one. If you gave me a ton of money, I'm the one that'll do it right.
It'll fulfill me for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Next question says, what does financial discipleship look like in a world of rising inequality, debt, and economic anxiety?
Man, like that, again, big question, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's one that, like, I consider myself pretty simple, you know? So there's all these layers and dynamics that come, but I think that question leads to, like, it's a very challenging thing to think about, but even more so to practice. But I think it involves at least understanding our possessions and wealth being used for the good of others, that I don't see this as, this is for me. It's, I have this and there's going to be ways that I can use it for others. And I've had moments in my life where I've been able to practice that really well, and it's been great. And other times when I've missed it and I've, you know, been much more focused on myself. But like, even thinking about like the things about like rising inequality, debt, and economic anxiety, like how much of this is based on policies, right? Like we're like, it's big problems, it's whatever. And that's an area I know very little about, but I couldn't help but think about like the early church, the first few hundred years, right? Zero impact on domestic policy, right? Like you don't vote in the next emperor.
Right.
You don't get to go to the town hall meeting and say, I think we should lower taxes here.
Right.
Like, it's just, that's what, and yet in their generosity, they transform their cities, they transform their communities. Right. So we sometimes think, okay, like if we just get this person in power, if we can just have this policy and those things can matter. Right. Cause we know those have impact. And yet again, what do we have control over? We have control over, well, I can be generous with my neighbor. I can follow that practically. And it's amazing. Jesus seems to be onto something with loving your neighbor as yourself. But again, really easy to talk about, very challenging to practice willingly and consistently, because, you know, those things are hard to do.
Yeah. Even like historically there are, you see that when really bad things happen, it pushes people together, right? And that it, that as kind of social and like even this, like inequality and debt and economic anxiety, all of those things we don't want, right? But are, like you said, are things that are often outside of our control, or like the things that cause them. And as that goes up, there's an opportunity for community to come together in a different way and in a stronger way, I think, and in a more localized way. And as you're talking, I'm just thinking about, I think you were probably the first one to say this, but this idea of just like faithful next steps, that like no matter what happens outside of ourselves, it doesn't change our call to follow Jesus in faithful next steps, kind of one foot in front of the other. And that's going to look like, leveraging what we have to support the needs around us. And
So now pair that with the conversation of sitting with Jesus following friends and say, okay, faithful next steps for us with our money. Do we want to talk about that?
Yeah.
Like, how are you doing that?
Yeah.
Here's how I'm trying. Am I doing it okay? Like, that's a vulnerable thing. Like, we have home churches here. Imagine having that conversation with your home church, right? Or with some good friends. And it really gets real, real fast.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too, because I think the time and time again, for the things that we stigmatize, we find that we're way more alike than we ever thought we were in them, right? So you think about, like, when we talk about stigmatizing, the stigmatization of mental health, that it was like, the more people talked about it, the more people found like, oh, we actually all kind of struggle with this, or we actually, like, there's a lot more of us than we thought. And I think that can be the same too with, would be the same too with finances, that the things that you're stressed out about or struggling with, like more people are probably going through that than you think in your immediate connections. Right.
Yeah.
By the end of, you're probably going to talk me into thinking it's a good idea to chat with my friends about money.
You know what? Try it. I want to hear it because I don't want to do it. You do it, and I'll
next hangout I'm gonna be like, "Hey guys, come sit. Open up the books."
Yeah. One step at a time.
This is kind of an interesting one, and I probably shouldn't say that because I wrote these, but. What role should the church play in redistributing resources among its members?
Here's a great question that I wrote.
I thought about this one when you were talking about the ways that the early church supported other churches and supported mm-hmm. other believers, and how mm-hmm. towards the end of your sermon, you were mentioning just more of the communal aspect of finances, mm-hmm. right, and how it should be. So, yeah. What role do you think church should play in kind of redistributing resources?
So, again, my perspective on this, I'm sure many other people could give many more like helpful or profound ideas on it. Mine sticks with the simple mindset. We talk about this when we do membership here at Bethany too, that the church is community in the same way that, you know, a family and a body is connected. And, you know, I'm very comfortable using that language because that seems to be what the New Testament uses consistently, right? Yeah. We're a family, we're a body. And when you think about like a family and a body, it's obvious that members would share resources.
Mm, right.
Right. It's just like, of course.
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to share my resources with my children. Like, why wouldn't I do that? I'd actually be a bad parent if I don't do that. And, you know, a body part that isn't sharing resources, you're like, actually, we need that. Like, you are vital to us. And I think in both of those, there's a sense that no one can say they're ultimately, you know, giving or receiving. It's always an interplay together. And you hear this in people going on overseas missions trips too, where like, we thought we were giving, but we received so much. So, I think this just helps us see ourselves as a community that we actually belong to each other, right? Rather than I just attend this church, that I belong to this church and these members belong to me and I to them. And, you know, I just think that helps us think a bit differently about the needs around us. And no one person is going to be able to meet any of them. But, mm-hmm. you know, as a church, we have our benevolence care that we offer as a way to try and practice this. But I know that people go above and beyond that as well, where it's off the books. They're just looking to help people. And so I think this is really good for any church. And we're certainly not the only church that does this. I don't want to give that impression at all.
No, we are.
We
quoted.
It's I love that we can say this about our church. Mm-hmm. And I also love that we're not the only ones, that 100%. This is, again, you know, the Church of God is trying to live this out faithfully in different ways in their context. And so, but yeah, should the church play a role in redistributing these resources? I think that's what family does. That's what about
body does. Kind of are, too, right? Yeah. Like, there's, little ways. Yeah, I love that.
You know, the other part of it is, you know, we ask this question, should the church be involved in this? Both our salaries come from the resources of our church being given to us. So, like, for either of us to say, no, I don't think so. We're like, we're direct beneficiaries of our church's generosity and their willingness to say, we believe in your work. We believe in you.
Yeah.
We are encouraged to be part of this community with you. And we want to free you up to give as much time as possible to this work. Here, let us be part of offering this gift so that you can pay your bills and more.
That's beautiful. I was going to say, I just plead the fifth to that question. That is super cool though. Like, and even as you're talking about, like that scripture, right, about they talk about in scripture of us being a body, that application to finances, I don't think is ever something I've heard before. Like, I think that's really cool. And it does bring up that, like, yeah, of course you're going to do that. Right. Like, of course you're going to like help out your kids. Of course you're going to. Right. So, yeah. Question four, where does generosity begin if you feel like you're just barely making it by?
Oh, man, that is such an important question, right? And I think it's important for us to be aware of, because we know that all of us have had moments in life, and some right now, and for some it's been a long, long time in their life where they're like, I'm just surviving. Like, yeah. So when you talk about generosity, are we excluding them? Right? Can you not be generous because you don't have extra? And this is why, you know, that story of Jesus pointing out this woman giving two pennies and saying she gave more than anybody else, you know, is really astounding. It's interesting. Like, I was talking with someone after the service about this and mentioning how, like, money is an obvious way to be generous, but it isn't the definitive way. You think about Jesus, you know, someone can fact check me on this, but I don't think we have any story of Jesus giving someone money.
I don't think so.
Would you ever say Jesus was not generous?
Yeah, no. Just
clearly, right? You know, so...
No, absolutely not, right?
Right, we say like, oh, no, he's incredibly generous. With what? With his time, with his attention, with his care, with what he had. And yes, we can look at stories like multiplying fish and bread and say like these miracles, but even that was essence of who he is as divine, and use that as a way to give something very practical, very needed. So yes, generosity will include money, but to think that that's the only lens we can think through it is I think missing the reality of generosity, of is God only generous to us when he does it to us financially?
Right.
No, he's generous with love. He's generous with healing. He's generous with compassion. He's generous with attention.
Yeah.
And so regardless of where we land on the socioeconomic scale, you know, scripture tells us that every believer is gifted by the Holy Spirit and is, again, part of this body and just knit together to be able to care for.
Yeah.
And I actually had, I know of a story of a shelter here in the city where, do you know Kiva?
Yeah.
You're aware of Kiva? So right, like these micro loans that you can donate to, and they kind of organize globally. And so people apply for loans, and then, you know, you and I can give a few dollars here and there. And then it creates these micro loans for people to help in their business or go to school or whatever. And it's financially available to them, and it's not overly expensive. Yeah. And so in this shelter, what happened is they actually set up a donation cup at the shelter for the residents of the shelter.
Oh, wow.
And so these are people that would be out, you know, also asking for money.
Yeah.
You know, and so with that, they could get a bagel at Tim Hortons, or they could go, you know, get a haircut or something like that. But what the residents were doing is they would take some of their change and they'd put it in this cup. Like, name for me people that are less privileged or have less financial fluidity. That's the wrong word. Is it?
I kind of like it though.
Is it? Yeah. If I'm fluid? Liquid.
Yeah, liquid.
Oh my gosh. There you go. All right. But name someone who's less liquid, who has less financial means to share. And yet think about the generosity and the attention that is bound up in that for someone who is dependent on so many for so much, is still able to say, I'm going to give. And so they would save up, and then that money would be sent to Kiva, and and then they could do it again. And because it's microloans, the money would come back, and then they could loan it again. And so,
man, that's
like
so cool.
Nickels and dimes, man. Like,
yeah.
Changing the world. Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah. I think of when we, back in the Seven Deadly Sins series, when we were talking about greed and generosity, and how we were saying like generosity is going to look different, right? Based on your socioeconomical status and where you're at. But I really like that kind of finer point on it, that the call of generosity is on all of us, no matter what that looks like, right? That there are ways that we can be generous and we can have that kind of posture in our lives, I think is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Our last question for today says, what might it mean to practice resiliency through simplicity in a system built on endless consumption?
You know, in some ways I feel like the answer is in the question, right? Like, our mindset culturally is you must always have new or more or different, right? We don't watch a whole lot of TV in our home, but I like watching YouTube stuff with, with my girls. We call it Saturday morning cartoons. And we'll watch like Mark Rober or watch like Chloe Abrams or whatever. Yeah. You know, she's got awesome science stuff. But we don't have the premium stuff. So the ads come on, right? Yeah. And it's funny watching my girls who are so not familiar with ads. They watch these things and like, these are weird. These are weird. And even like some of the phone ads, like Emery again, who's 11. She's like, that wasn't even, that had nothing to do with the phone. They just flipped a switch and suddenly everything was purple. What does that have to do with the phone? So, you know, we have this, this mindset where, you know, new is exciting. Get what we have because it's better. And that's our consumeristic, like, I want to be, like, name it, comfortable, excited, thrilled, whatever. I'm sure there's better ways to talk about that. But then simplicity forces me to come back to what really matters, I think. So, yeah, there's a simplicity in just saying, well, what are my needs? And then my mind goes to gratitude. Yeah. You know, like even earlier I was thinking about it and like you probably have thoughts on that too. Like the idea of simple pleasures, like being grateful for the sun today.
Yeah.
And just how incredible that is as someone that goes kind of dark come end of February when, you know, I'm just like, I just want a sunny day so that I feel like, you know, I can go on, you know, the sun is shining today or someone a little while ago brought over a whole container of raspberries for us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I didn't get a single one, but, you know, my family enjoyed them, you know, and you're like, wow, what a generous gift, raspberries.
Yeah.
And I think it was March, you know, and like that must have cost you a fortune and just the gratitude for things like that. So, you know, simple pleasures can, you know, that's where my mind goes.
Yeah. Because I think there's like... I think it would be fair to say that normally, or I think I've found for myself that my compulsion towards excess is always rooted in something, right? Like my desire to live outside my means or outside of what I need or that sort of thing is rooted in something, whether it's like you're saying, whether it's my fear of or unchecked desire to just be comfortable or to XYZ, right? And that I think gratitude helps to break the loop of overconsumption, right? Like when you actually stop to recognize the value in your life, in things, in the simple things that you have, I think gratitude just helps to sometimes lift some of the anxiety off of those worries you have. Like if I feel like I need XYZ to feed some sort of fear that I have about scarcity, gratitude for the things that I do have, I think kind of interrupts that anxiety and helps to kind of shine a light on what actually is true in that moment, if that makes sense. That's also a bit of a meandering thought.
Yeah, but you and I are good at the meandering thoughts, but it brings us to good places, right? Like even the sense of if gratitude or simplicity, they help us reorient back to what is true wealth, right? And get you thinking about, you know, what really matters in life, what really matters. This felt unrelated at the time, but a few weeks ago, someone was in a conversation with me and they talked about, unfortunately, someone whose home had burned down and they talked about like what they grabbed. Yeah. And they asked me like, if your home was burning, what would you grab? And it struck me as, oh my gosh, like what would matter?
Yeah.
And, you know, you think about in times of crisis, sometimes you think about, okay, what am I grateful for? I'm grateful for my relationships. I'm grateful for my health. And so that simplicity can bring us back to that sense of what really defines wealth from a kingdom perspective.
Yeah.
Right. What really defines that. And when you meet people who seem to have lost so much or have so little, and yet they behave as though they have everything.
Yeah.
You just go, this seems real, and I want to learn to do that, because the other stuff, like the consumerism, that just keeps feeding you empty lies.
Yeah.
I've been in those cycles. I believe those lies, and I'm still working on realigning myself. But you and I know, like the truth of Jesus, of what is true life, it's Christ that's holding on to him and what he brings. Those are fulfilling.
That is a wrap for today's episode. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We love having these conversations, but they're even better when you're a part of them so that I don't have to accidentally compliment my own questions as we're reading them. If you have questions, thoughts, or topics that you'd love to hear about, you can shoot us a text at 905-937-5300. Or you can email me or Andrew at Evan or Andrew at BethanyCC.ca. All those will be in the description as well. Before you go, don't forget to subscribe to the BCC pod so you never miss an episode. And if you're enjoying the podcast, do us a favor and leave a quick rating or review. It's a simple way to help others find us and be encouraged as well. Thanks again to Jamie for hanging out and chatting with us today. And we will see you all on Sunday and back here next week. See ya.